Good morning to everybody, and it's so nice to see familiar faces and new faces. We're so grateful that Philip has been coming to Seattle Insight for all of these years. We have a wonderful set of guiding teachers here at Seattle Insight, and also these amazing teachers who come and visit. Philip has been teaching for more than 25 years. And was on the Teachers Council at Spirit Rock. He also is an author of several books, Dancing with Life, which we've used and referred to so many times as we've been talking about the Four Noble Truths, Emotional Chaos to Clarity, and Awakening Through the Nine Bodies. As Jerry said, that this weekend is a weekend of practice. So welcome to everybody to have this lovely day and tomorrow of quiet. There's a resource page that is on the that is in the chat, and also at the end of the retreat for everyone who's registered, you will get a an email with the resources so that you can, in case you miss them while we're on the retreat. So, welcome to Philip and a warm welcome to everybody. I'm wishing everyone a really good, quiet, settled, and inspirational retreat.
Thank you, Suze. This is because this is a fluid retreat, it's different than most of the retreats I teach because some people were here last night and they're not here today, and others will arrive tomorrow. And so it's a different orientation. And when I'm doing some, I tend to teach things that compound, that build on themselves, that we get a base and then we understand it more deeply and then more deeply, more broadly, and so forth. So there's a bit of my starting over here to account for that. And I'd like to do that before we do our first sit by saying a small number of things about what it means, a practice method. The Dhamma is the Dhamma is the Dhamma. Unsurpassable, good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. Really quite amazing. How we go about practicing the Dhamma, how we go about understanding what the Buddha is saying, and how we move into both samadhi, these deeper concentrations. The most important one, which I view as access concentration, where the hindrances of mind, where those turmoils in the mind are at bay to the degree that you can really have both personal understanding and then the Buddhist insights. Very important, whether you're doing vipassana or samadhi practice. And so to do that, we need a method of practice. We need a method of making ourselves available that works while we're on retreat. And from my point of view, we need a method of practice that works on the street of life. Because most of our time, as lay people, as householders, we are going to be not in a monastery practicing, but in our daily lives. And so if we don't have a practice method that will support us during that time, it's a much harder going. Our 20-minute sit, 30-minute sit, hour-long sit, 2 hours a day sit, these are all times that many people do. There's variations of that. Even our occasional self-retreat for a half a day or a day on the weekend. They're really useful, really valuable, but that's still such a small percent of our time. So the importance of having a practice method to first know the Dhamma, have a way to get in relationship to the Dhamma, where we are available for the Dhamma to occur within us, and then the cultivation of the Dhamma in daily life. And some years ago now, 7 years ago, something like that, maybe more, Trey Sella, who's here, is guiding teacher there at Sims, and a woman named Dana De Palma, who was at that time the co-guiding teacher at Spirit Rock, who had both practiced with me, and said to me, "Philip, we want you to start to teach the things that you practice with," and this included this practice I've developed about differentiating the various capacities we each have in our consciousness, all of which show up in a retreat. And the way that I developed this practice around this. So with their encouragement and their really constant urging this, I had always done pieces of the way I practice, but I really moved to just really leading these retreats from my own internal experience of practice, which is a quite organized practice. It's quite organized. I've been meditating for over 50 years, and I had to find my own way for various reasons that had to do with physical difficulty and so forth, that I had both things that were easy for me, and I just even the very thing of just sitting was so painful for so many years. And out of this, I was responding to the conditions that were present in my own karmic conditions. And so that I developed a practice and never thought that I would actually be teaching the practice. So what we will be doing is we will be experiencing this form of practice from within the practice. That is, I am not, when I do a guided meditation, it is not me outside guiding you. I am actually just sharing what's going on in this moment in my own mind, in my own practice right now. And I'm just saying it out loud. That's a very different way, maybe, for what you've been exposed to. Maybe not. How can I know? So if I could have slide number two, please. So this, I call this practice insight, natural arising clarity, natural arising samadhi. There it is that the practice is one of not going into a contraction to effort, but rather going into an opening and being a flow into the experience. So you're not trying to get to some experience. You're being available, and your own mind heart will lead you to the experience that's taking you deeper into the experience. And like I say, during a retreat like this, I do a lot of guidance because you have to learn how to do this. This is maybe a new approach. So that's what happens. Naturally arising refers to the spontaneous and effortless unfolding of experiences, insights, and qualities of strong concentration when conditions are appropriately set. So there's not a forcing, there's not a controlling. It's not a practice of striving. It's a practice of letting go. First, we establish ourselves in an inward staying way where our attention is in the turning the mind hearts, turning into the mind heart. It's not outgoing to what's going on in the body or around us in the atmosphere. It's all internally. That's called inward staying, which you'll hear much more about. And then we become available, and there's a very specific sequence for being available, and which you will learn today in some depth. This process aligns with the mind's innate capacity for clarity and presence. Repeating, innate capacity for clarity and presence. Clarity is the mind being able to receive. It clearly sees, and that creates the possibility of recognition and the kind of recognition that leads to realization, and therefore insight, and therefore being able to choose non-suffering over suffering. And that is the purpose of practice from my point of view, is to be able to choose non-suffering over suffering. It's quite a thing to imagine being able to do that, not just sitting here in our sangha together, but when you're in the supermarket, when you're at work, when you're dealing with a difficult situation with your sibling or your child or your parent. This process aligns, again, this process aligns with the mind's innate capacity. So what we're doing is getting out of our own way. And it's fostering wisdom. So it's a practice that is founded in wisdom and leads to more wisdom. And again, our ego is out of the way. And there comes a balance in our meeting life. A balance in meeting life. And it does feel very uncontrived, very natural, this feeling of this. And could I have the next slide, please, number three? There's these preparatory or preliminary practices that we will be doing, which is a systematically turning ourselves inward. I don't know now, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, sometime, with the Venerable Anālio. I was doing a retreat with him, a small people at BCBS retreat center, and he did a 45-minute practice of this kind of a preparatory practice, and he was using suttas to do so. And I was so thrilled to see someone else doing what I do. I don't use suttas in that way, but he was doing a preliminary practice. And you will hear me use this phrase, mindfulness front and center. That is his phrase. And I delight in getting to use it and to acknowledge the Venerable One. And I also use this phrase, mindfulness in the surround, so that we're in the middle of mindfulness. So we've dropped into that capability of the mind having a kind of attention. And we're not trying to get there. We're not going, oh, I need to do this and this. We're just dropping in as best we're able. And there we are. We're just dropping in. So all of this doing, accomplishing, let it go, let it go. And these two techniques we use are the renunciations, which I did last night, but some new folks are here today, so it may be appropriate to do that again. And then what's called the arriving sequence, which is a three-part focusing, clarifying of attention. And we end up with a mind that is directionally aligned towards our practice. But we didn't try it. We don't have this is what we got to get directionally aligned, and that means that we just do it. We just kind of follow instructions, and then when you're sitting by yourself, you just do your own instructions, and you find yourself there because you've gotten out of the way. It's really, really nice to experience this natural quality of responsive mind, and this is a surprise to so many people. The mind naturally becoming collected and unified, which is what so many people struggle with, is having the mind stay concentrated. And to have it happen just naturally, you know, that's great when it happens. And that may not happen at all for you today or tomorrow, or it may be easy, or it may come and go. We're letting loose of all this expectation. And the next slide, please. So you've heard me use already this inward staying, and this inward staying is a phrase that I first learned many, many years ago, decades ago now, from Ipaska Key. And she says in her wonderful book, which is a little hard to read, and she's a tough teacher. Very. She's like come on. So I'm not that kind of teacher, but I admire it. And maybe we can add that to the resources page of this book. Again, it's not easy reading, but so here we go. The mind that's aware of awareness, that is the mind that's turned into itself, this capacity of awareness, this capacity of knowing, this capacity of knowing. It's not tuning into something being known. It's tuning into its own knowing capacity. So it's knowing itself. It's resting within itself. The mind that's aware of awareness doesn't send its knowing outside this awareness. Nothing can be concocted in the mind when it knows in this way. In other words, an inward staying, unentangled knowing, all outward going knowing cast aside. You know, the Buddha teaches that our minds are a tangle, and so much of our efforts are dealing with that tangle and learning how to untangle the tangles that we already have and ceasing this compulsion to create more entanglement. And this, so when she says unentangled knowing, awareness itself is not entangled. Well, it's not entangled. It's not going out in that way. It is being utilized. It's being utilized by regular moments of consciousness, and it's being utilized by mindfulness when we're being mindful of objects the way we are with the four foundations or four establishments of mindfulness. The awareness of the body, awareness of the mindfulness of the body, let's put it that way, mindfulness of Vedana, pleasant and unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Mindfulness of the mind states that are present, what mind states present now, and the emotions that have come with it, and then mindfulness of the how life can be seen from the Dhamma, whether it's seeing the awakening factors or the hindrances or what makes up a moment, all of which leads to the freedom of the Four Noble Truths, which is the ultimate of the awakening. It's the practice that includes everything. Everything else is sort of an extrapolation from that, teasing it apart so we can understand it. And so this awareness, we can try to go looking for it in all this, but that's not what we're doing here in this. We're just dropping into what we find. And this requires a little bit of trust of yourself. And you have views and opinions about yourself, and what the value of the renunciations is that you are not feeding those views and opinions. You're not feeding the judging mind, the comparing mind, the fixing mind. It's only a habit. It's only a habit that we do that. We do not have to be doing that, yet we do. We do. And so we're going to see all this for ourselves. And if we could, let's do one more slide before we do that. So inward staying. With inward staying, the focus stays solely engaged in cultivating the innate wholeness in the mind itself. Background body sensations and mental observations come and go, although not as many as you would think. That's one of the wondrous things about this, that it's surprising how much all of that paying attention, particularly to what the mental observations just kind of gets very quiet. But the mind is so fully occupied in its own cultivation that there's little interest in these occurrences. There's a distinct felt sense when the mind is inward staying. This practice method really emphasizes the actual felt sense of experience rather than the labels we put on it. We're very interested in the felt sense, and every sense gate experience, including experiences arising from within the mind, have a felt sense in my experience. And my whole practice, all of these times, my whole practice, my whole teaching since I started that part of that being part of my practice has been based on this felt sense.